ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Is it working actually? Is it broadcasting?
Normally it's working at the light
on. I thought so. But it should show up, right? We should be there. It's not?
It will come now.
Okay, devotees, we're reading today Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 21, Conversation between Manu and Karadama, Text 14, correct? 14?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, it's Yama.
It's working. Oh, we're there. Let's see.
I think it's
a bit delayed.
Yeah.
Let's see if it shows up. All right, anyway. Yay! Mayaya!
Mayaya!
Te!
Te!
Hatta!
Hatta!
Medhasas! Twat Padaravinda Bhava
Sindhu
Kota Upasate Kama Lavaya Tesha Rasisha Kama Niraye Piye Syo. Ye Mayaya Te Hata Medhasas Twat.
Ye Mayaya Te Hata Medhasas Twat.
Padaravindam Bhava Sindhu Potam. Upasate kama labhaya te sham.
Upasate kama labhaya te sham.
Rashisha kama niraye piyesyo.
Rashisha kama niraye piyesyo.
Ye mayaya te hata medhasas twat.
Ye mayaya te hata medhasas twat.
Padaravindam bhava sindhu potam.
Padaravindam bhava sindhu potam.
Upasate kama labhaya te sham.
Upasate kama labhaya te sham.
Rasi shakaman niraye piyesyo.
Rasi shakaman niraye piyesyo.
Ye mayaya te hata medhasas twat.
Ye mayaya te hata medhasas twat.
Padharavindam bhava sindhu potam.
Padharavindam bhava sindhu potam.
Upasate kama labhaya te sham.
Upasate kama labhaya te sham.
Rasisha kama niraye piyesyo.
Rasisha kama niraye piyesyo. Ye mayaya te hata medhasas twat. Padaravindam bhava sindhu potam. upasate kamala ayatesam. Rāsīṣa kammāṇīra yevi yesyo Yemāyaya te hata meda sattva
Yemāyaya te hata meda sattva
Pādāravindam bhava sindhu kotam
Pādāravindam bhava sindhu kotam
Upāsate kamala pādesam
Upāsate kamala
Rāsī sakāmāhira ye piyesyo
Rāsī sakāmāhira ye piyesyo
Yemāyate atamedasattva
Yemāyate atamedasattva
Anarvindavasindhukottam
Upāsate kāmala pāyateṣaṁ Rāsīṣṭha kāmāṇīra yevi yesyo
Matter James. Upasate, worship, Kamalavaya, for obtaining trivial pleasures, Tesha, there, Rasi, you bestow, Isha, O Lord, Kama, desires, Niraye, in hell, Api, even, which desires, Sio, can be available. Translation, your lotus feet are the true vessel to take one across the ocean of mundane existence. Only persons deprived of their intelligence by the spell of the deluding energy will worship those feet with a view to attain the trivial and momentary pleasures of the senses, which even persons rotting in hell can attain. However, O my Lord, you are so kind that you bestow mercy even upon them. purport by Srila Prabhupada. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 7th chapter, there are two kinds of devotees: those who desire material pleasures and those who desire nothing but service to the Lord. Material pleasures can be attained even by hogs and dogs, whose condition of life is hellish. The hog also eats, sleeps, and enjoys sex life to the full extent, and is also very satisfied with such hellish enjoyment of material existence. Modern yogis advise that because one has senses, one must enjoy to the fullest extent like cats and dogs, yet one can go on and practice yoga. This is condemned here by Kardama Muni. He says that such material pleasures are available for cats and dogs in a hellish condition. The Lord is so kind that if so-called yogis are satisfied by hellish pleasures, he can give them facilities to attain all the material pleasures they desire. But they cannot attain the perfectional stage attained by Kardama Muni. Hellish and demoniac persons do not actually know what is the ultimate attainment in perfection, and therefore they think that sense gratification is the highest goal of life. They advise that one can satisfy the senses, and at the same time, by reciting some mantra and by some practice, can cheaply aspire for perfection. Such persons are described here as hatha metasa, which means those whose brains are spoiled. They aspire for material enjoyment by perfection of yoga or meditation. In Bhagavad Gita, it is stated by the Lord that the intelligence of those who worship the demigods has been spoiled. Similarly, here too, it is stated by Kardama Muni that one who aspires after material enjoyment by practice of yoga has spoiled his brain substance and is fool number one. Actually, the intelligent practitioner of yoga should aspire for nothing else but to cross over the ocean of nescience by worshipping the personality of Godhead and to see the lotus feet of the Lord. The Lord is so kind, however, that even today, persons whose brain substance is spoiled are given the benediction to become cats, dogs, or hogs and enjoy material happiness from sex life and sense gratification. The Lord confirms this benediction in Bhagavad Gita: whatever a person aspires to receive from me, I offer him as he desires. Ye mayaya te hata medasas tuat, padaravindam babasindapotam, upasate kama lavaya tesham, rasisha kama niraye piyesyu. Your lotus feet are the true vessel to take one across the ocean of mundane nescience. Only persons deprived of their intelligence by the spell of the deluding energy will worship those feet with a view to attain the trivial and momentary pleasures of the senses, which even persons rotting in hell can attain. However, O my Lord, you are so kind that you bestow mercy even upon them. Namaha Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishna Mujalaya Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swadhaniti Nandane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Kucharne Niravishesha Shunyavadi Vastujyane Shudharne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasani Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vajgam Turubhya Sri Sindhu Vyayavaja, Vadidana Vavadevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So there's a very strong verse and very strong purport from Karadama Muni and Srila Prabhupada. And it is sort of a, not exactly a counter, but at least a clarification, perhaps you could say, of a particular message which is there in Krishna consciousness to some degree, and particularly is spelt out or stated elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam. Elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam it's stated, akama sarvakama mokshakama udarati tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param, that whether one has no material desires at all, means like a devotee, or even if one has all material desires, like some very extreme materialistic person, or whether one wants liberation from the material world, whatever you want, tibrena bhakti yogena, you should endeavor for that through bhakti yoga, yajeta purusham param, by rendering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's a well-known verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the earlier part of Srimad Bhagavatam. And there are examples, particularly Sarvakama, someone who has all material desires, just like extensive material desires. Sarvakama means desiring everything. The classic example given is from the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Dhruva Maharaj. He wanted a kingdom bigger than that of his grandfather. And his grandfather was Lord Brahma, whose kingdom happened to be and happens to be the entire universe. But he wanted a kingdom, Dhruva Maharaj, bigger than that. So, the whole universe, that's everything. That's everything. So he wanted everything. He wanted more than everything, you could say. So it's a very classic example, very vivid example of someone who's just deeply absorbed in material desire. Then moksha kama, someone who wants liberation. There are different examples of people like that, and how pursuing their idea through devotional service, they achieve that, but then they achieve more than that, like the four commands. Well, just to go back to Dhruva Maharaj momentarily, yes, he wanted everything, and you know, it's a bit of a long story. One should read it in the fourth canto. We're going to get there, what, after a year or something? I don't know. After a while, in our Bhagavatam classes. So he had such great, great material desires, but he became convinced to do or to try to achieve them through what that particular verse we're referring to is talking about, yajeta purusham param, tivrena bhakti yogena, engaging in devotional service, as a sacrifice, as an offering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Narada Muni convinced him to do that. You will get your kingdom if you do like that. And in due course, Dhruva Maharaj became very advanced, realized Krishna, and got the opportunity to have the unlimited kingdom, but because he'd become Krishna conscious, he had lost interest. Anyway, the four Kumars, they were impersonalists. Sri Sri Radha Radha Sri Giri Govardhana Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ke. They were impersonalists, meaning they had realized the impersonal Brahman. But then actually they also met Narada Muni. Narada Muni appears in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam quite frequently. And with him, they were expressing their enthusiasm for Brahman. This Brahman is just wonderful. We like Brahman so much. But Narada Muni told them, you know what? I know of another Brahman, a sort of a different type of Brahman. And that other type of Brahman is even better. And the four Kumars said, really? How can we find that Brahman? And Narada Muni directed them to Vaikuntha. And they met the Supreme Personality of Godhead and they became devotees. So they were pursuing their moksha kama idea. They were not pursuing the idea of let's become devotees, we want to become devotees. They were just thinking that impersonal realization is great and we can get an even better variant of it, so let's do it. All glories to impersonal realization. But they became engaged in devotional service and they realized Krishna, they became devotees. So this is part of or verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Even there's another verse, it's in the second canto, which explains the same point, but specifically in regard to chanting the holy names of the Lord. That if you want all material things or liberation, etc., etc., just chant the holy names. So, but here, you could say our potential enthusiasm for that program is being sort of tempered a bit, it's a warning. It's a warning. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, actually we read last night in the Gilits Namahata, Apichetsuraracha Obajate Mama Nanyaba, Sanarega Samantavya Samyagya Vasatoisa, that if a devotee somehow or other becomes engaged even in very abominable, terrible activity. But if the devotee remains fixed in Krishna consciousness and doesn't sort of get carried away into just a whole program of abominable activity, but if the devotee remains fixed in determination despite the fall down, that I will continue in devotional service, then that devotee should be considered saintly and should not be mocked or criticized. We should not find fault too much with that devotee for their accidental or momentary fall down. So that's one thing. But then, in the same, this is the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verse 3, Krishna says, what does Krishna say? Oh, let's just have a look. Krishna says, 9-3, how does it begin? Ashradadana Purusha Dharmasyasya Parantapa Aprapyabam Nivartante Mrityu Samsara Vartmane. Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore they return to the path of birth and death in this material world. The point being that it's one thing if a devotee has a momentary or accidental fall down. Even the devotee does something really very wrong. Prabhupada uses the term abominable. That's really very bad indeed. But they should still be considered saintly as long as they keep focused in Krishna consciousness. But if they don't keep focused in Krishna consciousness, and particularly if they start using Krishna consciousness as an excuse that I can engage in sinful activity and chant Hare Krishna, and Krishna's patita pava, he'll deliver me. If someone gets into some habit or develops that sort of attitude, committing sinful activity on the strength of chanting the holy names or rendering devotional service. Of course, this is the seventh offense, but this is what Krishna is talking about in the third chapter of the ninth canto, which we just read. And this is what Karadama Muni and Srila Prabhupada are discussing here in this verse. That there may be, there is an element of flexibility for the sincere soul if there's some weakness or something like that, or perhaps if a person has not matured sufficiently in Krishna consciousness, something like that. There may be an element of flexibility. But certainly, if people try to take advantage of the process of Krishna consciousness to facilitate and somehow validate their program of sinful activity, this is not acceptable, and it will not be accepted, and actually the person will fall down. As chapter 9, verse 3 of Bhagavad Gita says, Mrityu Samsara Vartmani. They return to the Mrityu Samsara, the cycle of birth and death. Means they just return to material existence. And then you don't really see them. Maybe a very long time before you see them again. Meaning being engaged in something of Krishna conscious. So the point here is that we should understand and accept what is Krishna consciousness about. What are we to do in our efforts to practice Krishna consciousness? What will be acceptable to Krishna and Parampara, and what will not be acceptable? And we should try by all means to maintain the proper standards. And if we do, then even if perhaps there's some sort of weakness to some degree, but if one really remains determined like that and consistently is trying like that, then at the end of this life one can go back to Godhead and one can become advanced in Krishna consciousness. So this week we need to grasp and accept and endeavor for and not be too sort of flexible or lackadaisical in our efforts in Krishna consciousness. And particularly not try to not be abusive in our efforts in Krishna consciousness, to try to take advantage. As Prabhupada points out, in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there's a whole discussion about different types of people who become devotees or become interested in becoming devotees or try, or who actually become like that for different reasons, different motivations. Particularly in its verse, 15 of the 7th chapter, here we are. Oh, verse 16. Chaturvidha jante man jana sukrita norachana arto jiyasu ar artarti jnani cha bharatarshana. Oh, best among the bharats, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me. The distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who's searching for knowledge of the absolute. As Prabhupada mentions in the purport here of this Bhagavatam verse we're looking at, that in this chapter, and in fact in this discussion here in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there are, in a little broader sense, devotees who are more seriously interested in actually becoming Krishna conscious, and they don't want to be diverted. But then there are others who are coming, who may be coming to Krishna consciousness, but they have other motivations. Two in particular, but actually three. First of all, those who are distressed. I think we all know that it happens often that when materialistic people who are otherwise not really interested in becoming devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the real sense, but when they get into some difficulty in life, they spontaneously turn to the Lord to help them deal with whatever the particular problem is. This is just a very well-known part of life. And we've told the story on numerous occasions before. Let's tell it again. One of our devotees, you probably didn't know, Hare Krishna Das from Amsterdam. You met him? Hare Krishna Das, a real character. But a very clever person. Very clever debater. He could argue almost anything. He arranged, or a debate was arranged, with the head, the president of the British Rationalist Society, which basically means the British Atheist Society. So he had it like a public debate in some public venue somewhere in London. And this, the president or chairperson of the Rationalist Society, was a lady who had been in debates with religious people before, Christians particularly. And, you know, being like a die-hard rationalist atheist and, you know, very into logic and reason in material philosophical terms, she had the experience of dealing with these people who would say things like this: well, we believe, and according to our scriptures, this sort of thing, which is not logical as such. And she expected the same from Hare Krishna Das. But Hare Krishna Das was so clever, and he prepared himself, that for practically the entire debate, he never once used the word God. It was simply logic and argument. And this woman was just totally couldn't believe it at all. And she became just so frustrated and lost that at a certain point, right at the end, she said, "Oh, God." And she's a big, official, authoritative atheist. But it happens. You know, they say in war situations, you never find an atheist in a foxhole, which means the hole made by a bomb. When it explodes, it makes an indentation in the ground. And the soldiers trying to advance, they go from those places where they're a little protected, just one by one from one foxhole to the other. And when they're being shot at all the time. So when they reach the next foxhole, it's like, "Oh God." So you never find an atheist in a foxhole. So in this material world, even amongst people who are really anti-God, sometimes some sort of interest arises because of distress. Or, Lord Krishna says, someone who just, they're not actually distressed, but they just want to increase their material wealth, power, all these types of things. So in order to do that, they may pray to God. So therefore, Krishna says that these types of people begin to render devotional service. Just a little. Even if they just say, "Oh God," it's sort of got something to do with devotional service. Then, of course, there's this third category, and that is the inquisitive. And their interest in God is at least a little more sincere, or at least there's a little more depth to it. It's not just for some gross material reasons. But even then, they become inquisitive about one process, and after they've looked into that, they become inquisitive about another process. And you know what they say? Curiosity killed the cat. If you're just inquisitive, 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 and you can't focus on something, you can't find something which satisfies you, or particularly which is true, then you're lost. And you're just not going to get anywhere. So, Kardama Muni, of course, he practiced yoga. Now, he's coming from the yoga meditation type background, although there's also Krishna consciousness, but it's maybe not like a classic devotee background altogether. So he performed rigid austerities and performed very deep meditation for 10,000 years, and then he realized the Lord, or rather, the Lord decided to bless him, to be merciful to him, by appearing in front of him. So here, Prabhupada, among other things, Prabhupada is comparing, contrasting Karadhava Muni with these other types of so-called yogis, as we read in Prabhupada Lilamrita, when Prabhupada first arrived in America, and he's thinking, how will I find people who may be interested and I can preach to them? How can I find places where they may already congregate? And I just have to go and the people are already there and they already have an interest. So, among other places, he decided to check some yoga studios, Hatha Yoga, because he thought, well, they're practicing yoga. And of course, coming from his background, he assumed they would naturally be interested in the topmost yoga, a deeper form of yoga, for really developing a personal relationship with the Lord. But when Prabhupada went to one or two or however many yoga studios to meet the yoga students, Prabhupada in Lilamrita, Prabhupada says that I found that the great majority of the yoga students were overweight, middle-aged women who were trying to lose weight. And therefore, when they heard about developing devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it was not really part of their existing sort of motivation for being engaged in some form of yoga. And therefore, Prabhupada gave up that going to those places after a while. So, Kadama Muni and Srila Prabhupada, they make the point here that you get these people and they're practicing some sort of yoga to some degree. They're practicing some sort of meditation. But they have some very clear motivation also of getting some material enjoyment. In other words, they're not on the level of someone who really does have a focus on the Lord, although there's some other ideas to some degree sort of in the background. These are people who are really trying to mix some yoga or meditation with some serious material activity. Just like Prabhupada said when he arrived and when he had been there in New York for not a long time yet, he met one, what was his name? Anyway, one yoga teacher who advised him, don't present anything too strict for these people, the Americans, because they just, you know, they're just not ready for a more disciplined approach to God realization or yoga or meditation. And, you know, he said, you have to adopt some of their habits, otherwise they won't relate with you. You'll seem like some sort of oddity, and they won't be attracted to get involved with you. So he told Prabhupada that actually what you should do, you should be a yogi during the day, teach some sort of yoga, but you should be a bogi at night. A bogi means a materialistic sense enjoyer. Some illicit sex, a bit of intoxication, maybe some meat eating, or at the very least, don't discourage them from those things. And they'd be very accepting that, yeah, sure, you can do these things. So as Prabhupada points out in the purport, these types of activities which these very so-called yogis and meditators are so much attracted to, along with doing some yoga meditation, these same activities are carried out by the hogs and dogs and cats, etc. As Prabhupada mentions here, the hog also eats, also sleeps, also engages in sex life, prolifically even. So if some human being is doing those things and is very interested in developing those things and, you know, like particularly say sex life prolifically, but do some yoga, then what is the real difference between them and the hogs or the dogs or the cats? They may be doing some yoga, but they have such a deep interest in these degraded things that their interest in yoga or meditation cannot be taken very seriously. It's extremely peripheral. And there's no seriousness or dedication or real focus, which is at least there with the devotee who somehow gets deviated unknowingly or accidentally, but at heart it is really doing his or her level best to be a devotee. So, as Kardama Muni says, even those people who are doing like that, they've lost their intelligence. They're thinking that some yoga meditation, some serious sense gratification can coexist and it'll be fine. And I'll become advanced in yoga practice and become some sort of realized person. So these people are hatha medasa. Their brains are spoiled. They've lost their intelligence. But, as Kardama Muni says, still the Lord may be merciful to them. How? By letting them become cats and dogs, if that's what they really want. Let them become cats and dogs. Yes, the Lord is so kind, however, that even today, persons whose brain substance is spoiled are given the benediction to become cats, dogs, or hogs, and enjoy material happiness from sex life and sense gratification. Yeah, with a bit of yoga on the side to make you a bit more fit so you can do your sense gratification better. So we as aspiring devotees, we have to be very careful about this. Every one of us has our conditioning. We've been in material life so long, And old habits die hard. We told, you know that story we told before? Prabhupada was watching a movie. Oh, not watching a movie. Prabhupada was in the front row in first class on an aeroplane. And they were playing, we were told, a David Niven World War II action movie. Yeah, all sorts of shooting and being blown up and all that. And David Niven, he would always be the hero, or often be the hero, in such World War II movies. So David Niven is going up the hill, being shot at by the enemy who are on top. And Prabhupada is not exactly watching, but he's just sort of glancing. And there's David Niven going up with his gun, and he gets shot. And he goes down. But he gets up and he continues. And Prabhupada's looking at this. But then he gets shot again and he goes down. But he gets up again. And again he continues. And he gets shot again. And Prabhupada dozed off. Just for some seconds or so. And then he woke up again. And it's right in front of him. It's sort of like unmissable. And there's David Niven. Being shot again, but getting up again. And Prabhupada, in a very dry way, said to his assistant, "Oh, not dead yet." So old soldiers die hard, and old habits die hard. And we shouldn't overestimate ourselves. And we shouldn't underestimate the power of Maya. So, really, we need to cultivate Krishna consciousness sincerely from the heart. And if or when we see some old ideas from the past coming up, maybe some idea of material enjoyment, then we should really try and take shelter of the Lord and at least do our very best not to just get captivated and captured by it and just go into some sort of material dream world and want to speak of actually get involved in such activities. And if we do our level best like that, then even though we have many shortcomings, but Krishna is very merciful to such devotees, and Krishna will help. As Krishna says, "I carry to them what they lack, and I preserve what they have." If someone at least at heart is trying their level best to be a proper devotee or become a proper devotee. Otherwise, as Prabhupada said, casual means casualty. You don't want to take it seriously. Something will happen. You'll get knocked down from a more real type of Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. Comments or questions from the seniors or from anyone? Yes, loud and clear, please. Well, if your question is, what are the chances, we would ask you to do the research and literally give us the figures, see what actually happens. But definitely the idea of our doing that is not or should not be just to facilitate better health and all that. Actually, our idea should be to introduce Krishna consciousness, you know, intelligently as possible, so that the people, as many of the people as possible, may, in as natural a way as possible, feel that, oh yes, okay, this is sort of like a next step or something like that. Or, for example, that that we should adopt a vegetarian diet or Krishna conscious diet, including offering the food to God. And, you know, then they're taking, it may be low-level prasadam, but it's sort of some type of prasadam. And the fact is that these things do, if done nicely, these things do influence some people who do become devotees, in fact. But it's an important, it's an interesting question. What is the actual result, in fact, of doing that? But I can tell you one result, which is, no, it's sort of, anyway, it's a result, although it's not really the main result, should it be, is that if we do it nicely, we may get a subsidy from the university, which will help us in our, you know, general, all the presenting, all our programs of Krishna consciousness. I know in Vince, the devotees were being paid by the university. Well, I don't know how they did it, but I know they definitely did it. And they were getting, you know, like several to 10,000 rands a month just for teaching yoga. And they were using the money, I think, or hope, for developing our broader Krishna conscious programs. Hare Krishna. Come back with some figures, because you know there are some major opponents of this program, type of program. There are some major opponents within this goal. Now, if you dare mention it to Bhakti Vikash Swami, you will just be, at best, laughed out. You know, you're a devotee, forget it. Really? And he's not alone. So it would be good to actually see. Because we don't want to waste our time. Yeah. If it in fact is not helping people, at least one person, you know, sometimes, to become a proper devotee. Hare Krishna. Yes.
For instance, Krishna is known to like take away instead of giving, right? Like, because his motive really is to take us out of this material world and take us back home. So when you speak of, you know, you can approach Krishna for material gain and basically enjoy material life, then how are you going to do that if Krishna, we are meant to just basically...
Okay. Well, it's a fact. Krishna is Hari, which means one who takes away material things from the devotees. But Krishna is best known for dealing with devotees in the ways that he thinks will help the devotees the best. So if that involves taking away, he definitely takes away. And there's so many cases. If it involves sort of giving some facility, Krishna does that. Also, it's not that Krishna is simply taking away, taking away, taking away, and that's all he does. You know, he has a name for taking things away from devotees who need to go through that experience in order to become more dependent on the Lord. But just look at Prabhupada himself. Krishna gave him, you could say, vast wealth. Millions. Yeah. At one point, Krishna took away from Prabhupada. Prabhupada talks about that. He was attacked by a bull or a cow in Delhi before he really, in the beginning stages of his preaching. And he was just on the ground, just kind of physically devastated. And he remembered there's a famous verse spoken by Lord Krishna from the 10th canto. I forget the Sanskrit. Anyone remember the Sanskrit? Yasyaham anagrinami harishyai taddanam shalai. Yasyaham. To that person to whom anagrinami, who I feel merciful, harishyai taddanam, I take away his money. That's literally dun-dun, meaning money or wealth. So Prabhupada remembered that at that time as he's lying there, that just seeing Krishna has sort of materially reduced me to this situation because he wants me to surrender more. And then Prabhupada, as time went on, the movement acquired all sorts of amazing places worth millions of dollars, and they were all completely under Prabhupada's control. So, but anyway, I think we've talked sufficiently in the context of this verse and these other verses we referred to about, you know, you could say the limitations of the idea that let us worship Krishna in order just to get material things. I think we've discussed that sufficiently in the course of the class for the time being. Yes. Well, there's a verse. It's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I forget the actual origin. I mean, maybe that's the origin. But there's a verse, Krishna speaking, and says, sometimes my devotee thinks that nectar is poison and poison is nectar. That, in other words, that getting material things is very nice. And Krishna says, I deal with that person in such ways that he gives up those ideas. Yeah. One thing you'll learn, stick at Krishna consciousness long enough. I'm not sure how long is long enough, but it's, you know, it's long enough. And you'll see Krishna is very astute. Astute, intelligent. Yeah. Astute is more like under different circumstances what to do. It's a type of intelligence. Yeah. But for his devotees, his underlying desire is always to help them progress. And if taking away or giving to them will help them progress at any given point in time, he'll do it. Srila Prabhupada came.